From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome to the From the Pavilion Lockdown podcast. On today's episode, myself and Callum Guest are joined by Wisbech Town and ex-Cambridgeshire skipper James Williams. We'll be talking about the 100, which has been pushed back a year, and its rather ropey finances, plus how the women's game could be affected by the virus too. This week's best 11 has been set by Callum, and it's the best T20 World 11 with a twist. More on that later on. And we'll also get James Williams to dream up his fantasy slip cordon. If you want to contribute to the show, you can let us know your best 11s or even your fantasy slip cordons. You can do at FTP Cricket 105 on Twitter and Facebook. So thanks very much for tuning in. My name is Ollie Slack. So delighted to say this week joining me, as ever, is Callum Guest. Thanks for coming on, Callum.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
And former Cambridgeshire County Cricket Club captain, James Williams.
Hiya, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you, Willow?
Yeah, not too bad. Looks like I picked the right year to retire.
You got a whole summer off.
I know, it's fantastic. I've not had one since I had my first shoulder up, so it's quite nice, actually. Spend some time at home and get some jobs done.
Anyone who's been on Instagram has seen you've been very, very busy in the garden, painting fences, putting up sofa furniture type things.
Yeah, it's just to get me out of the house to stop watching CBeebies, to be honest. I think I've completed most children's TV programmes over the last 6 or 7 weeks, so just to keep my sanity going.
Good to hear. Well, everything looks lovely in your garden.
And, thanks.
And the sun always helps as well. Although your daughter wasn't too impressed with your painting by the looks of it.
No, she wasn't. She is not very happy with the painting of my palette so far either. She tried to help me with that as well. So she's setting her standards high already, which is good to see.
Cal, how's the last week been for you? In Ireland still?
Yeah, still in Ireland, yeah. No, it's been good. Weather's been all right. It's only a couple of days rain. I had my birthday Sunday as well, so I had a couple of heavy ones on the weekend, so it was good.
Yeah, how difficult was that actually trying to celebrate your birthday and possibly having the thought of a hangover when you weren't even allowed out your house?
Well, it meant I got a good lie-in. I mean, I don't think I got out of bed till 4 o'clock the next day, so it was a good session.
So very similar to probably your Cambridgeshire days after wins up and down the country, Willow.
No, we're very professional.
Especially Newcastle, it's almost forbidden to have a beer in Newcastle.
Yeah, you're not allowed to go out in Newcastle, never.
I'm sure if you racked up 500 on day one, you definitely weren't doing that.
Never. We never racked up 500.
I was waiting for you to say that.
Up 400. We racked up 400 after losing the toss, so we're pretty happy after that.
So what else have you been up to over the last week, Cal, other than your birthday celebrations?
I was doing a quiz for my little brother last week, and
all right.
I was just saying it's almost like your playground, Slacky. He's doing it to Tom Banton, Tom O'Bell, and a couple of the other Somerset lads. So.
Oh, I would. Did he say who won the quiz? I'd back Abel over Bantz, definitely.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't actually ask him. I just said, how did it go? And he said, yeah, they like the questions. There's a couple of good ones in there. I said to him, try and look up some stats and be a bit of a badger and try and get up some stats that they wouldn't expect, like first-class strike rates or something like that. Not that I know what they are, but, you know, ones that they wouldn't guess, maybe.
Who stupidly got out 40 last year in a championship game in the middle of May? Let's actually talk some cricket news, then, if people haven't turned off already. It was actually announced earlier in the week about the 100 being postponed for a year to 2021. It was probably the obvious call, given that they want to maximise the new tournament. Was it any more unsurprising than any of the other postponements, Willow?
No, I think it was always going to get called with the continuous delay of the first class season, and it doesn't look like they're going to have to play it behind closed doors. So, yeah, they obviously need the income from it and the support from the crowd. So that was always going to be a call from the ECB.
Let's talk numbers now then, and I'm quoting from a George Dobell article on ESPN Crick Info. Now, Tom Harrison, the chief exec of the ECB, has said the 100 should cost around £40 million, with a £51 million revenue. That's a £11 million profit. However, that doesn't include the £1.3 million paid to each first-class county, turns up to about £24 million, in order to lure the counties in to voting for the 100. That would take the overall cost to £64 million, meaning a loss of £12 million. Now, Harrison has said the £1.3 million to each county is a dividend, not a cost. But then also another county boss has come out and said that there's an extra £15 million should be included in the cost to account for setup fees, focus groups, consultations, that sort of thing. Where do you sit with this, Willow? Are the ECB just trying to spin a few statistics for us and make it look a slightly prettier picture? Are you more cynical?
It's tough to look at, really. not many things make a profit first year of going into business. You know, it's always a tough ask, and particularly something as new and as eccentric as a 100 ball tournament. So, you know, the ECB are obviously going to be backing it and saying, yeah, they're going to be making money, and there's always going to be the critics. You know, you read a lot on Twitter, not many people are behind it. You know, I won't name names, Mr. Slack, but, you know, it's something new. People said it about T20, you know, however many years ago, that nobody would get into it, and look at it now. It's the biggest format in world cricket at the minute. So I think it's about giving it a go and seeing what happens.
I think, like anything, they're going to have to rely on potentially other countries to get involved at some point. I think that's the long-term thing. I'd say the difference between 100 ball and the T20 comp is that I speak to my dad, and went back when he was playing, and you know, in the 80s and 90s, there was always midweek T20 competitions, but no one ever called it T20. It was just a 20-over game, you know, played at night and just to fit in games. So it was always like kind of a thing that had happened, and then it just got moved into professional ranks, and it was obviously it's gone on from there. Whereas the 100 ball comp is literally a new format completely. No one's ever done anything or heard anything before. So it's whether or not other countries are going to need it.
Given the difficult financial situation you'd imagine cricket would be in after the virus, I'm not sure any sport is going to come out on, you know, in better circumstances after it. Do you feel it's a risk then making the 100 like a beacon of light, the one to lead cricket out of the virus? Do you think that's a risk? Do you think they should perhaps go over a more reliable route and put the money into the T20 competitions?
Well, I think that would probably, everyone would think that's the sensible option, but I think they're always trying to chase that, you know, the pot of gold that almost the IPL's that had. It's almost had a monopoly now on the T20 format. I know everyone's playing catch up when obviously we know England was the first country to actually have the T20 comp. So it's almost like they're trying to create a thing that's going to be just as successful. But I suppose you're never going to know how something goes until you get into that first season. So if they are running it at a loss and they can afford to for the first season, maybe people will start giving it a chance after that. But
yeah, I'm with Callum there. I think it would be nice if a little bit more money was put down to grassroots cricket and, you know, our other cricket like T20. And I think the loss of the 50-over comp is downgrading that after just becoming world champions is possibly the most detrimental thing to our game. But like Callum said, we are playing catch-up, but it'd be nice to see us. Yes, we may make a loss over the first year, but I think in the scenario that we're in now, people want to go out and watch cricket and they want to get back into sport. And I think it might do it some good in the end, you know, hopefully. But we should wait and see.
Yeah, it's also worth pointing out that the 100 is not due to make a profit in its first five-year cycle. I don't sound like a doom-monger, but these are statistics that should be made aware to the public. The ECB's cash reserves, which could be used to help recreational cricket, especially in times like this, have fallen from £71 million to £11 million. Of course, a lot of that could be due to the money spent on the 100 as well. Make of that what you will. Let's talk about women's cricket though, Willow. What do you make of the current state of it at the minute? The ECB sort of shook up the women's game last year with the removal of the Kia Super League, that finished, that being replaced by the 100. Of course, then the Women's County Championship as well, which is a one-day competition, about 30-odd teams who compete in that. That competition has been supplanted by a 8 regional centre of excellence system. The ECB were also meant to hand out 40 full-time domestic contracts to players across the country. But assuming no cricket goes ahead this summer, Willow, there's going to be a lot of women cricketers out there who are not going to be paid this summer. It just feels as though the women's game has hit a little bit of a roadblock.
Yeah, I think they had all the build-up going into the 2017 World Cup where we won it, and there was a lot of emphasis on women's cricket. And just after that, the emphasis was still with them. But you can just get the feel over the last year, 18 months, where it's just starting to die down, and the KSL finishing and just giving them the 100. I think that's kind of showing the way that the ECB are thinking at the minute, which is a shame because they got to a point where women's cricket and participation in women's cricket was huge in this country and just growing. You know, schools took it over. They got rid of tennis and rounders and took women's cricket on as a major sport in schools. And all of a sudden, it's just started to drop off, which is a huge shame.
What about women's cricket in Cambridgeshire, Willow?
To be honest, our numbers are really, really good. We've got a lot of really good squads, big numbers in squads as well, and quite a lot of people trialling, which is brilliant. They want to give them that opportunity to play at that high level of cricket. And the encouraging thing for me, a lot of coaches want to get involved with it as well. A lot of the coaches that are working in the boys section, they want to go over and work with the women and the girls, because to be honest, working from both sides, you get a lot more from the girls. They listen and they want to learn. The lads, they just want to just hit balls and try and smack it out of the ground.
I'd say that's one of the things with originally when they got rid of the KSL is that they're actually attracting quite a lot of really good overseas players to the actual tournament and good coaches as well. I mean, I think in the first season, obviously Sussex, the Vipers had James Kirtley coaching. You know, quality coaches are wanting to almost learn their stripes in the women's game and then potentially push through, which was, well, it's not seen in the football game really. You don't get an opportunity, and you know, it's a shame they got rid of it. And like I said, they had quality overseas players coming over as well, which is something that is sometimes a struggle. So it was a bit of a strange situation. And obviously, like you said, they've almost put all their eggs in one basket.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Let's move on then to a bit of fun. And this was actually your task you set us this week, Callum. Do you want to explain what we were doing?
Yeah, so it's a T20 based task. You've got to pick your 1 to 11 in T20 cricket, and there's one person from each nation only. Try and make it as realistic as possible, so try and get your top order batters in there, preferably openers where they should be batting, you know, in T20 cricket. Don't try and make it up just to fit in the best players. So, yeah, good luck with that one.
Okie dokie, sounds good. Right, Willow, go on, mate, you name yours.
So I've gone for Babar Azam from Pakistan.
Yeah. In fact, before you start, were there any names that you put down straight away and just said, I'm not moving them, they're in and done?
Yeah, there's a couple. So Babar Azam was definitely one.
Yeah.
Kohli was certainly one. And then Rashid Khan as well. They were my three definites.
And why were they just literally in there? Put them in with a permanent marker, not going to come out.
They're just, you know, Babar Azam is one of the best batsmen in the world right now in all three formats, and he looks absolutely class when he gets going. He's one of the best looking batsmen to watch technically. Kohli, you know, again, world's greatest player at the minute, and he just steps up in every format that he plays and on every stage, so he's got to be. And then Rashid Khan, he goes around the world doing this for fun. His stats in 50 over cricket might not be amazing, but T20 in franchise cricket and international cricket, his stats are ridiculous. So he's got to be in there.
With Rashid Khan, there was a lot of talk when T20 first came in and after a few years of it sort of being in the game that it would completely nullify spinners and there wouldn't be any room for them in 11. It'd all be about pace and, you know, crash, bang, wallop. But in fact, they've become really important in 11 now, and a lot of sides have two spinners. Why do you think that is?
It's just a variety that they get. There was a lot of talk, wasn't there, with the mystery spin a few years ago with Sunil Narine and Mendes from Sri Lanka. You know, they dominated cricket. I think it's gone through stages, I think, with spinners. When it first came out, it was all about spin. Then it kind of died off and it was, like you said, pace, crash, bang, wallop. They wanted the pace bowlers in there. And I think it's now gone back to spin again. Particularly the likes of leg spin, you know, Adil Rashid as well, and people like that who can spin it both ways and can hide it as well as they can. You know, these guys are always going to dominate in this form of cricket, and Rashid Khan, how anybody picks him, I have no idea.
You also see as well with spinners that captains use them as an opportunity, really, especially if they're potentially all-rounders who can bat as well. They use them to almost waste overs. So you might see a spinner, I think in the T20 final in 2016, Joe Root opened the bowling for England. In fact, got Chris Gayle in the end, but how they often seem to sort of wait, get rid of an end, and obviously then it's less for the captain to think about, whether it be just sort of darting in Yorkers and taking up six balls, or like I say, using the first over of the match, and obviously batsmen don't tend to go much, but it seems to be a tactic used pretty often by captains.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of talk, you know, even in minor counties when we know opposition and how they normally go, and you know the bowlers that they're going to use. So if a batsman goes out, they're expecting to face, you know, a seamer that they're known, and then all of a sudden this random part-timer comes on, their mindset can change, and that's what it's about. It's about trying to mess up the mindset and the psychology of the opposition. And if you can squeeze in a couple of overs, you look at Brisbane Heat in the BBL, they use Matt Renshaw at the top of the innings, you know, bowl a couple of overs of darts or something like that. And Cams did it with Eddie Ballard one game it worked, the second game it didn't. So, you know, second game I learnt my lesson. That's the thing about T20 cricket. It's all about variety and something different. And if you can try and mess up a batsman's mindset, as quick as you can, then happy days.
I will let you crack on with your team, but you made an interesting point about Eddie Ballard. How difficult is it, though, when you're thinking, yeah, so you quit while you're ahead, he's done a really good job, but equally, if I can get one more out of him, then it'll even be better, and then probably 9 times out of 10, it doesn't quite work. How difficult is it to find that balance?
Yeah, it is difficult. You know, we did it a couple of years back in my first year as captain, in the first year of T20 at Norfolk. We took 4 bowlers with us. We weren't quite sure where we were short on availability and we needed someone to bowl a couple of overs. And Eddie, as he does, sticks his hand up, fair play to him. And first game, he bowled a couple of overs at the top and bowled really well. Second game, because they knew what was coming, they went after him. And, you know, he still bowled, don't get me wrong, he still bowled it all right, but they knew what was coming and it was a bit too predictable for me, really. And it's learning when that predictability is worn off. So that's the thing. At T20, you've got to chop and change every over, if not every other over, just so batters don't get settled. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's just knowing when to get off the train that's been going pretty well for you. Yeah, so number one, Babar Azam. He's going to be opening the batting with Quinton de Kock. Kohli at 3. 4, Williamson.
Nice.
5, Shakib Al-Hassan, presuming that he's got off his ban. 6, Ben Stokes. Number 7, because I thought it was the top 11 teams, it's Craig Irvine. Didn't realise we could have anybody. Andre Russell in at 8, Mitchell Starc at 9, Rashid Khan at 10, and Lassis Malinga at 11.
What do you reckon, Cal?
Good team, nice. I like it.
You know Craig Irvine, don't you?
Yeah. He oversees for my boyhood club that I obviously grew up playing. And he come over and we were in Div 1 looking to get promoted to the Premier League. He obviously had good reviews. He was playing good first-class cricket, just broke into the international team. And he come over and ended up bowling left-arm spin and not being much of a batter. Anyway, he went away having played about 30 games and scored 150. And then we've seen on the winter, it was the T20 World Cup in India. I turned on the TV and all of a sudden he's like 50-odd red against Australia facing Richard Johnson bowling Thunderbolt. So it just shows you sometimes it's not easy sometimes to go overseas and perform and actually better the standard. Some people actually prefer that rather than, you know, facing your dibbly-dobbly English seamers. Sometimes it can be a struggle.
I'm sure many championship batsmen will say facing Tim Murtagh on a chilly May morning is probably a lot worse than it'd be a nice true wicket in the middle of July again.
Well, he proved that last year at Lords, didn't he? Mm. So he took that 5 for in the
he's
morning.
Now he's now retired, isn't he?
Is he?
From international cricket.
He had to make a decision, didn't he?
Did you say Craig Irvine was bowling left arm?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he bowled left arm spin.
According to Wikipedia, he's a right arm off break bowler.
Well, ain't that true? I'm not sure he bowls too much then.
Well, he said he's a middle order batsman. Left-handed bat.
Left-handed bat. Obviously, his brother Sean Irvine, who was playing at Hampshire at the time, and I'm from Sussex, and it's an hour and a little bit away, so it's relatively close. We had a family, and they got kicked out of Zimbabwe in 1999. They were white farmers from Zimbabwe, and they come over as a family, so he lived with them. They had a good connection, really good connection, actually. And like I said, turned on the TV in the winter, and he's all of a sudden 50 red, so. Oh, it's good to see.
What was your boyhood club, Cowan, Sussex?
Bexhill.
So it's Bexhill, all down to them, that got him warmed up and ready for the World Cup.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. Certainly didn't get used to the weather because it's a bit cold down there. It's right on the sea.
Willow, having Ben Stokes in your team, how nice would that be as a captain? What balance does that provide to that T20 11?
You know, he's someone that can bowl at the death, although not in the T20 World Cup final. Yeah, he's just one of those cricketers that you just want in your team. He can change the game of bat, ball and in the field. He's someone that you need. So, yeah, it'd be nice to have someone like that in your team. A bit like Callum that bowls off spin. To be fair, one of our better seamers last year, you know, swung the ball on the sixpence every ball.
What does that show about the apparent lack of seamers, though, in Cambridgeshire?
We've got loads of seamers. Callum was a stopgap for resting some of the seamers that we had in our
I see.
Team.
We won't go down that alley again.
No, we're not going down that alley. It's nothing to do with me anymore.
Yeah.
We've got loads of seamers. Nickname must have, talk about.
Nickname must have the donkey.
Overworked. Willow, Kohli, Williamson, Shakib, are you worried at all that they'd be slightly too slow? I mean, There's a lot of debate about Joe Root, whether he should be in England's T20 side because he's not the most explosive. I'm just thinking those three are probably more aligned to Joe Root than potentially other more explosive players in the game.
Yeah, I think even Williamson, I was having a conversation with a few people about this earlier today, and they said, Williamson, it's like, his stats in T20 cricket are still ridiculous. You know, he plays for Hyderabad, and his stats are so good that he can play in whatever format and whatever position you want to play him. He can adapt. He's just got that ability to do it.
Would you say T20 is the hardest format to captain?
Tough question. No, I reckon the longer format's the toughest.
Toughest on the legs?
Yeah, toughest on the legs, physically, mentally, liver-wise. yes. I think the longer format's tough because you have that psychological drain, the mental drain, the physical drain, plus you've got to look after players and making sure you make the right decisions at the right times. And I think T20 is hit and miss. You either make the right decision or you don't. It's more about plans and things like that. So I think there's a lot more that can go wrong in a longer format than what there is in a shorter format.
So Callum's got the easy gig this season then with the white ball team.
I wouldn't say that. I'm not sure about that.
Rippers has got the hard gig. Callum, if you can, and connection pending, do you want to give your team?
Yeah. I've got Brendan McCullum at one with Jason Roy.
That's controversial.
Controversial. I didn't realise Brendan was still playing.
Well, I was doing it on just legends, and he's only recently retired, so.
August 2019, according to Wikipedia.
August 2019?
Yep.
That's been a cricket season over here since then, so I reckon that's pretty recent.
All right then, continue.
Babar Azam at 4, AB de Villiers 5, Maxwell 6, Andre Russell 7, Rashid Khan 8, Sandeep Lamachain from Nepal at 9, Mustafa Zur Rahman from Bangladesh at 10, and Lasif Malinga at 11.
Who's keeping wicket?
De Villiers or McCullum could take gloves, and then I'll have Virat Kohli as captain.
Poor, the old guy's the job of keeping wicket, bless him. Are we allowing Brendan McCullum, Willow?
Yeah, just because he's class, or was class because he's retired. but yeah, we'll let him have it.
And also, you just got to picture Jason Roy and Brendan McCullum at the top in the power play, and it's just going to be absolute fireworks, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's carnage.
Yeah, definitely so. I asked the same question to Willow, I'll ask to you. Were there any players that you wrote in straight away into the 11 and then just said, I'm not changing them?
It's Kohli and de Villiers for sure. And then I had kind of a throw up. Roy, I was debating Stokes. And then actually Maxwell, I was kind of debating Aaron Finch as well to open the batting. But I think as a all-round T20 team, as an opening batter and as a batsman in general, I probably had enough middle-order batters to not fit Williamson in. So it was about getting McCullum in there. And obviously, like you said, he's obviously not playing anymore. But
did anyone else find that you just seem to have loads of all-rounders in? I think I had must have had four or five all-rounders at one stage before I tinkered it and changed it.
Yeah, I was the same. I still have got four or five all-rounders in there. But I think that's what most, you know, successful franchises have, that versatility to go, right, we'll have all these all-rounders and someone that can change the game with bat or ball.
Willow, any other players in your 11, Willow, that you know or you've met? Or likewise with you, Cal?
No, never met any of them. Although Jason Roy used to play for, he played his club to Reigate in the Surrey Premier, and there's a couple of lads I know that played with him. They always actually said he almost had a KP swagger about him when he was playing club cricket. It was almost like he knew he was very good.
Is that a nice way of saying an arrogance?
Well, yeah, I suppose that, but yeah, that is a nice way of saying it. I think they had a few other words to say about him, to be honest with you, but that's the thing, I think. You got to have that confidence, because if you look at his career to start with, he actually wasn't doing very well. He played a lot of second 11 matches and stuff like that, and obviously would go down to club cricket to get into some form. But he gave off the perception that he knew he was very good and just waiting for a chance, really.
Well, he's right. He is very good, but
yeah, he's very good because he's made my T20 all-time 11.
Yeah, it's true. But he's batting with no one because your other member in part was retired. So.
Well, you're talking about Brendan McCullum, he might as well be have a Zimmer frame around him.
The only person who I wouldn't say met, but when I was lucky enough to be a volunteer at the World Cup final in last summer, I was looking sort of keeping guard of the photographers just in front of the pavilion at Lords, And when all the celebration, all the cameras turned off, all the families, parents, kids, etc., came on the outfield, and Jason Roy was sort of lifting his baby up like the scene at a Lion King. And the photographers absolutely crammed around him to try and get this picture. And there's me sort of just looking starry-eyed behind him, slightly blurred out, gazing at him as he's sort of interrupted this lovely family shot. My head in the background, which that's my claim to fame at a year 11.
I think it's a prerequisite when you get a child, you have to hold it up, Casino of the Lion King, and sing the song as well. You just got to do it.
That's what Willow's been doing in his spare time.
Building up the shoulders, mate, just, you know, a bit of shoulder press.
Is that also because you probably watched the Lion King about 48 times?
Not yet. She watched Frozen for the first time last week, and I'm a little bit worried that's the first of many
probably will
times
be.
That we'll be watching that film.
The only problem I have with your 11, both of your 11s, because I think you've both got, am I right in saying, Andre Russell in?
Yeah.
Is I have an agenda, really, against the majority of the West Indian side who played in the World Cup last year, because I watched them at Hampshire at the Edges Bowl, and they were absolutely dreadful. They were just completely taking the mickey the whole time, like they didn't want to be there. I mean, Chris Gayle bowling with sunglasses on. I mean, Chris Wokes came out to bat a 3. I mean, obviously, he's clearly an unbelievable cricketer. But it was just an absolute mickey take, really. And I mean, the decent players, or the young players on that side who want to crack on, like Hetmyer and Pooran, must have been thinking, flipping it. You know, Andre Russell's bowling with a crooked ankle. But I mean, to be fair, if you're paying them lots of money, Cal, I'm sure they'd get on and play pretty well.
I think Andre Russell a couple of years ago had a ridiculous record where he played in 4 different franchise competitions and all 4 of them teams won that franchise. I think he might have played for a bit for in the English. I don't know. Was it Worcester he played for?
He's played for Worcester. He played for Notts a few years ago, didn't he?
I think Worcester might have went and won it in the end. And then I think he won the BPL and then went and played for Sydney Thunder. And I think he played Jamaica Teller was in the... I think he had a ridiculous record where he just literally every time he went there, they won. So that's why I put him in. And also you can... I've seen games where he just absolutely smokes it. He can just, if it's 60 to win off the last 3 overs, there's a chance he'll do it by himself. Just a freak.
Yeah, certainly a handy cricketer. So this is actually one of the weeks where I'm actually able to contribute as well. Last week, I wouldn't have been much good with the best Pro 11 I've played against. Because I don't think I've managed to muster 1. And any Junior 3 cricketers probably wouldn't make it anyway. So my World T20 11 consists of Babrazam again, another name who was just... put him in straight away and wasn't going to take him out. Originally, Ben Stokes was also in that category. But I then had the scenario where literally half of my team was made up of all-rounders. So I potentially sort of take him out for Butler or Jason Roy. But in the end, I did put him back in. So he's down at 6. But I'll read the 11 out. Babrazam, Chris Lynn for Australia, AB de Villiers at 3 for South Africa, Shakib Al-Hassan again, like Willow said, as long as he's back off his ban for Bangladesh in at 4. Nicholas Pooran behind the stumps for the Windies. I watched him play again last year and he was just unbelievable. It's him or Hetmyer really, but I went for him because he can obviously keep you on the stumps. Although I do admire Hetmyer's floppy hat, wearing that in the in 2020 or 2019. Ben Stokes in at 6, just I think probably maybe, well this time last year I might not have put him in, but given what he did last summer, just the purely because of the mental state of the bottle to produce 2 match winning knocks in those circumstances, unbelievable. Roelof van der Merwe for Netherlands in at 7, just because just watching him every week for Somerset, just absolute darts in at the stumps. And like I was saying to Willow earlier, just takes up overs really for the skipper. Rashid Khan then, Jasprit Bumrah in as well for India, purely because I think those last 4 or 5 overs when you need someone to bowl at the death, I can't imagine there's too many better with those slower balls. And he really dries up the runs when he's bowling. Lockie Ferguson, New Zealand, and then similarly Lassie from Malinga as well. So that's my 11.
Tell you one thing, Ollie, I wouldn't be wanting to face your seam attack.
No, that's pretty sharp.
You go out to bat with some steel toe caps just thinking I'm just going to get every single ball on the toe.
Can't be a good Yorker.
Honestly, yeah, well, that's what they say.
Willow, when you were captain last year for CAMS, what was your go-to delivery? What were you saying to your bowlers at the death? Was it backing them for their sort of change-ups and slow balls, or were you more traditional and just going trying to break their toes?
Don't go for 6, mainly. It was always a back their own skills. You know, there'll be someone that has an incredible slow ball, or there'll be someone that who can bowl Yorkers. Everyone has different skills, and it's about them having the freedom and letting them just do what they need to do. You know, I think the benefit that I had a squad in both red ball and white ball cricket that knew their games pretty well, and I didn't really have to do much, to be honest. It was just picking a team and letting these guys loose. So sometimes picking a team is the hardest bit.
Yeah, I'd say observing like obviously playing. I'd say that the game we got it perfect was the Norfolk one day at Exning, yeah. where we had Waxy running in bowling Yorkers up the hill, and then we had Big Timmy Moses running down the hill bowling short, and it worked quite nicely because the boundaries square of the wicket were a lot longer than they were straight, and it was almost one of them where we just got the whole surroundings and everything. It worked almost like to perfection, yeah. and obviously we got the victory, and it was actually a good victory because we were probably just slightly under par we thought with yeah. the score, and probably one of the only times where the seamers had absolutely, you know, they'd nailed it, and the spinners hadn't bowled particularly well, and one time that Cambridgeshire could turn around and say the seamers have, you know, done a really, really good job there since I've been there anyway.
Yeah.
Do you think, or potentially why then, do you think there's less of, I guess, captains having a style of playing cricket? So a captain saying, our team bowls Yorkers at the death, our team does this at the death, rather than what we tend to see, which is captains saying we back our individuals to do what they do best. Why do you think that is, rather than, like I said, a captain saying, right, we're a team and we're going to bowl Yorkers, we're going to practice them, and we think that's the best method, and as a collective bowling group, we're going to bowl them at the death?
I think it's down to the team that you're playing against, and the, like Cal said, it's the grounds that you're playing on. If you're playing on a pitch that's really big square, you probably, and short straight, you don't want to be bowling full. So if you miss a Yorker, then you could go bop straight over your head for six. So it depends on the team. You know, some people may be good at short balls, so they'll be able to bop it over the rope that way. Some people might be able to ramp you and hit you for boundary there. Completely depends on the type of cricket that you're playing now and the surroundings and the environment that you're playing in.
And also, I think it comes down to a lot of it comes down to training. It's really difficult when, you know, you get your one or two sessions a week. You know, you have a club session, you have a county session or something like that. It's really difficult to turn around to bowlers and say today you're not, or to say to batsmen even, and say today you're not facing bowlers, and they'll go, well, where's my practice coming from? Because there's only so much bowling machine you can do before it becomes almost a bit, you want to face some bowlers. So it's that kind of difficult conversation where you've got to say to bowlers, today you're going to spend 45 minutes on bowling Yorkers. Bowlers will just turn around to you and go, no. You know, because they want to challenge themselves against batters. So whereas in a professional environment, they train four or five times a week. You know you're going to be bowling at batters one day. So if a coach turns around to you and says, go and bowl Yorkers for 45 minutes, it's almost like, I will go and do that, because when it comes to the season, that's going to be needed. I've seen my friend that I went to school with, Finn Hudson-Prentice, wrote under the FTP podcast the other day, and he's one that really, he works, and I've seen him work on his skills massively. He used to be a batter that bowled a bit. He's gone away and really worked. For Derbyshire, they got to the T20 finals day in his first season, and he bowls at his time of bowling is at the death and in the power play. And I watched a video of him the other day of him really working. He has two sets, so he almost has 20 minutes on each, where he'll work on the lengths he needs to bowl in the power play and the lengths he needs to bowl at the death. And they're two completely different lengths.
Is that where team selection then, Willow, becomes so important, because you're picking players on what they do best?
Yeah, I think from a white ball, where we were quite lucky, availability was really good, and we had the luxury of making good decisions. And you know, I dropped myself for a majority of the T20 stuff last year because, you know, let's be honest, I'm not a T20 player, and I might as well bring someone in that's going to change your game. I think the luxury that we have is, I think Cal would probably be honest there, the lads that he just talked about, that Norfolk game, the Tim Moses and Waxy, you know, they probably weren't put in those situations in club cricket last year because they dominated the league, those under pressure situations and having to execute your skills at the right moments. But these guys are such good cricketers that they can do it. They can just switch it on and off. Same with the other, like, you know, Guesty being able to run in and bowl, spin 1 minute and then just bowl Harry Potter's the next. The fact is we have got some good cricketers in Cambridgeshire, and they can switch it on and off when they need to.
That situation, like you said about seeing Timmy, and I actually think that day they actually thrived under it. They thrived under a bit of pressure. I think Timmy got a bit of tap in his first over. I think Waxy bowled a few wides, or maybe bowled a five wides. And, you know, they thrived under that bit of, we actually need to perform today to win. It's not going to just be handed to us on a plate. And that's when you actually sometimes get the best. Some people will react differently. Some people will crumble in that situation. Others will think, hang on a minute, we need to actually get a clear plan of what we're going to do, because these lads can play, kind of thing.
I know when I used to bowl, and bowling at the death, someone's trying to hit you out of the park, you've got to try to take wickets or keep them under whatever runs. it's such a great challenge, and I used to love it. You know, sitting back watching people do it now, I kind of get a little bit jealous. But
I saw you bowling with that toilet roll in the garden willow the other day, and you should definitely be bowling for Wisbech still.
Oh, you didn't see me bowl Saffron Walden a few years ago. You wouldn't have said that then.
I can only go on with the videos I've seen, Willow.
Oh, why do you think I picked up your shoulder last year? It was still at Saffron Walden.
it fell off somewhere along the line.
It's somewhere in that maze, isn't it? Somewhere in the maze down the hill.
For those who are listening, Willow's just done an excellent demonstration of his shoulder flying through the air, but of course this is radio, so you won't be able to see it.
Sorry, yeah, it's radio, yeah.
Sorry, we need to turn on audio description.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Let's move on to your fantasy slipcordon then, Willow. Your dream slipcordon involving a number of celebrities or famous faces, wicketkeeper, first slip, second slip, third slip, gully, one of them and one only must be a cricketer. And you can put yourself in addition as well.
No, guess he's seen me try catch. I'm not putting myself anywhere near that slipcordon. I'm very happy at mid-off. Do you know what? This has been the hardest choice between out of the T20 team and this. This has
really
been the hardest choice. Yeah, I just couldn't get the right mix of people. You know, I had Josh Bowers in at my wicketkeeper just because he is the most eccentric, strange person you'll ever meet. And he's just, and plus he's one of the best wicketkeepers I've ever played with. So, but he's out. Sorry, Josh, you're gone.
You gave him the big build-up.
First slip also stands a bit wider with Josh there because his hands absolutely reek.
Yeah.
So the slip horn actually gets moved a bit.
First slip would still be standing quite wide with the wicketkeeper I've got. A wicketkeeper I've got in James Corden.
James Corden?
Yeah, only because I heard he gives lifts. So he'd be good for away games.
He would be good in the car.
Yeah, it'd be great in the car. And he loves to sing song.
What's similar mobility to Josh Bowers?
Yeah, Josh is good in the car for sing-alongs only if he scores runs or takes a worldie. If he misses a stumping or he's not had a good day, drives to Newcastle and not very good.
What's your go-to music then, the car then, Willow, on away days?
Oh, do you know what? It's a good mix. It's just a mix of everything. People ask me, like, oh, what's your favourite type of music? Could be anything. It could be from Backstreet Boys going to Bastille or something like that. It's whatever's feeling right at the moment.
And are you singing along or toe-tapping or on the wheel?
I spend a lot of time in my car and I spend a lot of time singing.
Really?
So, wow. Yeah, it gets me through the journeys.
That sounds like a good podcast episode. That does Away Days of Willow.
Not sure about that.
Continue, go on.
Get a GoPro cam on.
Yeah, exactly.
So first slip is my favourite actor of all time, Tom Hanks. Love his films. I think it'd be a great character to have at first slip.
What's his best film?
See, I was just looking at this. I think it's either Forrest Gump or Green Mile. I love the Green Mile, but then I love Forrest Gump. I think Forrest Gump, the way he acted and that, and the character he had to play was... But then Castaway, you know, him and Wilson had a really good relationship.
A serious bond, that.
Serious bond. But then I think a really underrated film of his is The Terminal. Great film. Great actor. So he's definitely in at first grabber. Second grabber is Sir Garfield Sobers. I've had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times and playing in his school's tournament in Barbados. So he's someone that you look up to as an all-rounder and go, you know, he's one of the greatest. So he's in there, definitely. Number three, as a Liverpool fan, Steven Gerrard's in there because I heard he's a good slipper.
Fourth best midfielder in Premier League history.
Yeah. I think Guesty got the slip quote there.
Yeah.
See, I can joke about it. I'm a Liverpool fan. It doesn't matter.
Well, I like to joke about it too as a Man United fan. But...
Well, you know, how is that Europa League? Channel 5 on a Thursday night.
You know what? I would kill for that right now.
I'd kill for us to win the Premier League. That'd be nice. That can happen.
Yeah.
And then just because it's VE day at Gully, Winston Churchill is my Gully. I think he'd be quite good in there.
Cigar in the mouth as well. Make sure he's got the cigar in the mouth.
Absolutely. Proper village cricket, sitting there with his bowler on, nice. Whites in, cigar as well. So, yeah, that is my celebrity slip corner.
And he'd be good in the dressing room, wouldn't he, Churchill? Imagine the speeches, getting the team up for it.
Yeah, he'd be quite motivational. I think he'd be quite good for that, definitely. Certainly get us going. It's better than my speeches anyway, I guess.
Imagine that. If you're in a mid-table game and you get a Winston Churchill speech, it's almost like, yeah, I think you save it, mate. Save it for the big time.
Save it, yeah. Don't need that.
Third day of a three-day game. Long, long day travelling. Batting to save the day.
Yeah, that's what you need.
He'd be there.
Or just get rolled over and get on the road quick. One of the two.
Yeah, Cal, what do you make of it?
That's a good call. He's got Gary Sobes in there as well. I'm sure he covered the other three in terms of catching. You wouldn't mind nicking to anyone but him. Imagine if you nicked off to that corner and just found Gary Sobers in the bread basket.
You watch a league of their own where they play that celebrity game and Corden bowled to Jimmy Anderson and got him out.
Amazing. It's like
a genuine nick off to Flint off at when he wasn't even joking. Genuine nick off.
I laugh, but easily get me out, so. Willow, glad you're well. Looks like your missus is just about to make you a cup of tea behind, so we'll let you go.
There's absolutely no chance she's making me a cup of tea. That is a snack for the little ones who's just woken up. So,
well, we'll let you go then. Thanks for joining us, mate, and we'll speak again soon.
Cheers, boys.
Callum, thanks so much for joining us, mate.
Good stuff. Cheers, mate.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So that's all we have time for on today's episode. Thanks very much for listening in. Thanks to our guest, James Williams, for coming on the show. And as ever, Callum Guest for joining me. We'll be back with another episode next week. All that's left to say is stay safe, stay well, and hear from us again pretty soon. Bye-bye. Cambridge 105.